This is Digital Story Podcast number 942, April 9th, 2024. Today's theme is The Irresistible Road Trip. I'm Derek Story. The convenience of modern commercial aviation. Just hop on a plane and within a few hours you have landed at your destination. Why would anyone spend the extra time and effort to drive there instead? Well, this photographer for one. And on today's TDS Photography Podcast, I will explain why I'm driving to this year's Sedona workshop instead of flying. I hope you enjoy the show. My sister, her husband, and their 12-year-old dog drove up from Southern California last week to hang out with us for a few days. Over dinner one night, we were talking about the long drive up Interstate 5 and how they navigated the challenges. At one point, my wife turned to me and asked, "So why are you driving all the way to Sedona for your workshop? Why don't you just fly there like we did last year?" It's a great question. For the October 23 event, we drove to San Francisco, went through all the pre-boarding rigmarole, landed in Phoenix, rented a Chrysler Pacifica, then began the journey north to Sedona. It was fine, but it did consume an entire day. I was limited on what I could bring to the workshop, and it was expensive. So since I have free charging with Electrify America for my ID4, at least for a few more months, I decided to drive to Sedona the second time around. First of all, it's free. Pretty hard to beat that. I can bring whatever I want to the workshop. That means more cameras to choose from each day, plus my own food, portable refrigerator, more clothes, better gear for our labs, and no one herding me around like I'm a dairy cow. Second of all, I can take pictures along the way. Who knows what I will see or experience between Santa Rosa and Sedona. And when I arrive, I will have my own car packed with my stuff and better able to serve those who are attending the workshop. My wife's question is perfectly logical. Lots can go wrong on a road trip, but lots can go right too. I think photographers are different. Given the opportunity, we need to spread our wings beyond the confines of a fuselage. Even if a unique photo op never presents itself, we have that possibility. We want stories to go with our pictures. In the end, my sister, her husband, and my wife understand why I must drive to Sedona this year. They know that, even though I sometimes defy their logic, my logic is what makes me the intrepid artist that I am. And they will greet me with open arms when I return. So yes, I put a lot of thought into this. First of all, I do like road trips. I really do. There's something about the open highway that is so alluring to me. I think, as I was saying earlier, there's something about the possibility that an interesting photo op could appear, an encounter could happen that leads to an interesting story or an interesting picture. I think those variables are part of the attraction for me. In the commercial aviation scenario, there are very few photo ops, and you can't even take pictures on the airplane itself. I know this for a fact. I have been approached by those who work for the airlines when I was trying to take some interesting pictures. So you can't do that. You dare not do it in the airport, or if you do, you have to do it serendipitously. And then what is there to take pictures of, honestly? I mean, I've tried to make that flying experience interesting visually, trying to have some sort of story other than I got delayed and stuck in Las Vegas or Phoenix or Dallas or wherever it happens to be. There just isn't the opportunity for good stuff like there is on a road trip. Of course, I have to fly sometimes, right? I mean, I can't drive to London from Santa Rosa. So, you know, then I do have to take a plane. But when there is the opportunity for me personally to drive instead of fly, I think that driving feels far less sterile than flying. As I said earlier, the whole rigmarole of flying is, if you've done it once, you've done it 1,000 times. You know, basically you get in line and you're herded from one spot to the next. You're told what to do. You're told when to do it. And you're told what you can't do. And that whole thing, after a while, just sort of gets on my nerves. I know that when I get back from a long trip, I usually land in San Francisco. When I land at SFO and I finally get out of the terminal and I take that first deep breath of fresh air, and suddenly I just feel so free and light, like I've been discharged from the service or something like that. You know, it's just, or jail, I should say, would be even a better example. There's just something about that, oh my God, my life is my own again. Now, one of the interesting things to me about road tripping, if you like to camp, road tripping and camping really kind of go hand in hand. A lot of things that I'm doing to prepare for my next camping trip also apply to the road tripping. I've got some cool stuff, and you may have noticed that on the Digital Story, I've embarked upon a series of articles talking about some of this new camping gear, or road tripping gear for that matter, that I think is a lot of fun and that makes the whole experience better. So I started out with the Jackery, with the power station, and I'm using that. Of course, that'll be with me. I'll have probably 2 power stations with me on this road trip to Sedona because we can use them in the lab as well. So instead of having to worry about extension cords and all that stuff, if someone needs a little extra juice, you just take a power station over to them. They can plug their laptop in, and it's so much easier than looking for an outlet and hoping you have an extension cord long enough to get from the outlet to the computer. I started with that. And then the latest one that went up is about the portable refrigerator, the 9-quart Bodega Mini portable refrigerator that only draws 35 watts of power. One of the next things that'll be coming up is a portable kettle that looks very much like a commuter mug, same shape, fits in the cup holder, all that sort of stuff. The difference being that you can plug it into a car outlet, a 12-volt car outlet, and it has all these settings to warm things, to bring water to a boil, to do whatever you want in this little kettle that looks just like a commuter mug. It holds 13.5 ounces, 400 milliliters. I just tested it, and you can boil water from tap water temperature to boiling in about a little over 20 minutes. I just tested it. I can plug it into the car, or I can plug it into the Jackery. So I'm going to be talking about that. I'll be doing a review on that, and I'll be using it on this trip. My idea is I'm going to fill up a thermos with coffee that I make at home. And then during the course of the road trip, all I have to do is pour it into my portable kettle and heat it up. And of course, then I'm not going to be heating that hot. Although coffee, I like my coffee hot, like around 185 degrees or so. So I'll heat it up to 185 degrees. It has a digital LED, so I can just set it to the exact temperature I want. So I'll be writing about that. I have a cool little device that plugs into the car outlet that lets me know what the battery voltage is, so I can monitor battery voltage. And at the same time, it has USB outlets for USB-C and A. I'll be writing about that. So I've got all sorts of cool stuff. This is all for camping, but it's also great for road tripping. So think about while you're road tripping over the course of a couple days. Then, you know, you have your refrigerator, so you have your own food with you. You don't have to worry about ice. You can heat water up to make, you know, noodles, ramen, or whatever, or to heat up coffee or to make tea, all that kind of stuff. That's with you. And then you have all your other creature comforts. And then suddenly it doesn't sound so bad, does it? It sounds a lot better than being held hostage on an airplane and coach. So at any rate, what I'm going to do for next week's podcast is I'm going to document the trip from Santa Rosa to Sedona in the ID4. And that will be next week's show. Now, of course, I'm very optimistic about the trip right now. I'm naturally optimistic, but however, that doesn't mean that the trip necessarily will go perfectly. And so I'll be reporting on warts and all. If everything goes perfectly, I'll be reporting on that. But if there's a few bumps in the road, I'll be reporting on that. So the bottom line is I'm really looking forward to getting to Sedona. I'll be there a couple days ahead of time so I can scout. And I'll be scouting in my own car with my own stuff. And I'm a photographer and I love taking pictures and I love discovering stories. And this drive from Santa Rosa to Sedona, I'm hoping will provide lots of fodder in addition to the workshop itself. Stay tuned and make sure you join me next week for how it actually turns out. YouTube CEO says it is a problem if OpenAI scraped videos for Sora. You can read this entire article on petapixel.com, and I have a link in the show notes. Let me read you a little bit about this, because I think this is an ongoing issue, and here's someone in a powerful position talking about it. YouTube has warned OpenAI that using videos from its platform to train forthcoming AI video generator Sora would break its rules. Speaking to Bloomberg, YouTube CEO Neil Mohan said that taking videos from YouTube to train an AI model would be an infraction of the platform's terms of service. Quote, from a creator's perspective, when a creator uploads their hard work to our platform, they have certain expectations, says Mohan. One of those expectations is that the terms of service are going to be abided by. Mohan explains that some YouTube content is scrapable for open web purposes, but that video transcript and footage are not allowed to be scraped. That is a clear violation of our terms of service, so those are the rules of the road in terms of content on our platform, he adds. It comes after OpenAI CTO Mira Murati said that Sora was trained by publicly available data, an opaque term that could include YouTube videos. Quote, we use publicly available data and licensed data, Murati told the Wall Street Journal. So videos on YouTube? The reporter asked. Videos from Facebook, Instagram? What about Shutterstock? I know you guys have a deal with them, end quote. Murati responded, I'm actually not sure about that. If they were publicly available to use, there might be that data, but I'm not sure. I'm not confident about it. I'm just not going to go into the details of the data that was used, but it was publicly available or licensed data. Sora is yet to be released, but OpenAI has shared several previews, including giving it to visual artists to make short-term films, and showing off AI-generated music video. The debate around large generative AI models and training data is one that won't go away, with Getty Images still embroiled in a lawsuit against Stability AI and the makers of Stable Diffusion for using 12 million of its copyright photos. But despite accusations of copyright theft on a scale that has never been seen before, reports that generative AI companies are still desperate for data to build their machines have circulated in the media. One of the reasons I think it's interesting for us, for you and me, is that as content creators, we have shared our content on these platforms. We've shared content on YouTube, on Facebook, Instagram, all those places. And if that content is going to be scraped without any discussion at all about the process of using it, then, I mean, that's concerning. I mean, we used to worry about our photos being used for advertising purposes without our permission or without us receiving any payment for that, concerned about our photos being used for other purposes that we just didn't know about and we wanted to know about, and at least be able to give our okay or our please don't do that. But now this is a whole new thing where tons and tons and tons of content, we're talking about before, you know, the odds of one of our images being used without our permission, well, they were fairly low, right? But it could happen. And now with so much data being necessary to train these AI models, I think the odds of our stuff being caught up in this are very good, are very strong. And then the question is, how do we feel about that? Are we okay with that? Is that just the way the world is going? And we just have to live with it, knowing that if we share data on these platforms, if we share our work on these platforms, that it quite possibly could be used for these things and that we're helpless to do anything about it. I don't know. I mean, this is where we are right now with all of that. So I think it's interesting when we have CEOs and CTOs from these various companies and platforms talking about this. I think to some degree, there's a little bit of a good feeling that comes with that, knowing that they're at least aware of it, they're concerned about it, and they might actually do something about it. Now, what could that something be? Well, we could still get totally left out of the equation. They could strike a deal, right? And they receive some licensing fee, and we still get nothing. The fee very well could not be passed along to us. It's something to think about when we think about putting our content on platforms now. It's not a no-brainer situation. I think we all have to be aware of what's happening. And then depending on how you feel about that, will hopefully lead you to what you're comfortable with sharing on these platforms, or maybe you just find a different way to get your stuff out there. Anyway, it's an interesting story. There's a video that goes with it where you can watch him talking and see what you think. And again, the link is in the show notes. I want to mention our infrared photography online workshop that's coming up in June 2024. So once I get back from Sedona, once I drive back from Sedona, the next thing that I'll be working on is preparing for our infrared workshop that's coming up in June. This is a terrific workshop, and if you want to experiment with a new type of photography that really has boundless potential, I think infrared is very satisfying. Some people stick with the black and white infrared. Some people really embrace color infrared. And there are just so many ways that you can go with this particular art form. We are going to be covering all of that in our online workshop. And if you're interested in joining us, all you have to do is go to the workshops page, and you can get to that via the Digital Story or the Nimble Photographer. And of course, I have a link in the show notes. I hope you'll join us, because I think you'll have a great time, and I think you'll learn about a whole new way to make images. OM Systems' focus on the outdoors leaves the door open for pen cameras, right? This article is on DP Review, and I have a link to it in the show notes. Before I actually read from the article, I've had a few conversations with people over the last few weeks and months about Micro Four Thirds photography, because it really has changed a lot recently. And when I say recently, I mean in the last 2 years, with the emphasis being on outdoor photography, wildlife photography, and the cameras and lenses being developed in the Micro Four Thirds space, especially by OM Systems, being very much geared toward outdoor photography. And of course, Micro Four Thirds is a perfect fit for outdoor photography because it's powerful, there's great reach, the cameras are very robust, they're weatherproof, and they're easy to carry around. So yes, I totally get that. But what seems to have been missing lately, and this is what some of us were lamenting, is the Micro Four Thirds cameras for street photography, for casual photographers, for photographers who are starting a family and they want something light and easy to carry around, but yet can give them quality images. Those are the pen cameras, right? And I've talked, of course, many times about how much I love my Pen F, and there's a whole bunch of folks that if they came out with a Pen-F Mark II with an updated sensor and a little bit of weather resistance built into it, that they would sell, I don't know how many units, but they would sell a lot of them. They would sell a lot of them. People would snap them up. And we're wondering, why doesn't OM System, you know, branch out or embrace this other side of their identity? And, you know, so some of the speculation has been that they have limited resources and they've got to go with their strongest suit right now, or where they think the most sales are. And that maybe over time, we'll start to see some cameras for street photographers, family photographers, and, you know, those who just like to travel, not so much in the wilderness, but just normal traveling, road trips, right? So that's why this interview caught my eye. That was on DP Review, because they're actually talking about this very issue. And let me read you a little bit about it. OM System says it's focusing on outdoor photographers, but hinted that the Pen series could yet return to the North American market. We spoke to Mr. Togashi, the Vice President of Brand Strategy and Product Planning. Quote, "Currently we are focusing on outdoor use photography," he says. "Based on our research findings, the number of outdoor photographers is expected to increase, or at least to stay stable. This makes sense for a company committed to a small system that's built on a strong reputation for its weather sealing. First of all, we have specifically targeted adventure and wildlife photographers because we believe our camera system is the best choice for this group of users," Togashi says. "In outdoor environments, having equipment that offers performance while being small and lightweight is crucial. For outdoor photographers, capturing the decisive moment of a living creature or an awe-inspiring landscape photograph is paramount. It's easy to assume that this just refers to the OM-1 and OM-5 models the company has updated since taking on the former Olympus camera business. But Togashi suggests this isn't the case. Quote, "Our definition of outdoor use extends beyond just the adventurous. It encompasses outdoor activities in everyday life as well. Our system is ideal for individuals who enjoy capturing snapshots, macro shots while traveling, or shoot astrophotography," end quote. Could this mean a revival of the Pen line, we asked? Quote, "In Japan and Asia, we continue to sell the Pen EP7, he reminds us. The EP7 is small with compact bright lenses, making it highly advantageous for travel photography. Therefore, we'll reinforce such project in our lineup in the future." Togashi didn't explicitly say that this means a return of the Pen line to North America, but says, quote, "We'd like to try to expand the scope of people enjoying camera for travels and for everyday use to capture scenery. For now, at least, the company's focus seems to be on higher-end products. We anticipate that photography enthusiasts will remain central to the driving growth of our industry," says Togashi. But he added, "It's important to attract new audiences to photography, identifying those who currently lack interest in cameras as an opportunity for the industry. We firmly believe that maintaining a stable business scale has broader benefits for all customers," he reasons. "Conversely, a shrinking market causes challenges for manufacturers in innovating and developing new technologies. Therefore, it's crucial to explore new potential customer segments. In the world of photography, acknowledging the diverse needs is paramount. By recognizing various perspectives on photography, camera equipment, and the art of capturing images, we anticipate the entry of new customers into the fold more effectively." So he goes on, he talks a little bit about trends and the role of AI, and you can definitely read all of that if you go over to the article, the Petapixel article. He also talks about the future of video, and that's pretty interesting. Then they wrap with the OM-1 firmware, and I'm going to read you that right now, this last paragraph. "Finally, we asked about the OM-1 and the launch of the Mark II and whether Mark 1 owners can expect further updates." Quote, OM1 users can expect some additional functionalities as a result of firmware updates we announced on February 21st, 2024, says Togashi. But he also says it's not possible to simply duplicate all the OM1 Mark II features in the older model. The OM1 II has increased internal memory and new optimized memory controls compared to the OM1, so providing all the new features to the Mark I is not possible. And we have heard that before. So it's interesting. When the OM1 Mark II first came out, I felt like there was a fair amount of disappointment in the industry, saying, well, couldn't this just be a firmware update? And then, of course, we learned that the answer to that is no. It could not just be a firmware update, that hardware and software have to work together to produce these features. And then, of course, some stuff, yeah, logically speaking, like you're not going to have, you know, the graduated filter working in an OM1 without the updated hardware, things like that. So, you know, we realize that, but at the same time, OM1 users, myself included, we do expect firmware updates that further enhance the capability of our camera and that keep it current. And so that's going to be interesting to see how they balance that. Yeah, the hardware isn't quite the same speed as the OM1 Mark II, but you know what? There's a lot of horsepower in the OM1, and there's a lot they can do, and I hope they do. So my two takeaways from reading this piece is, first of all, you know, I do think we're going to see firmware updates for the OM1, and I'm hoping that they're good. And then second of all, I'm crossing my fingers that they are going to return attention to the pen line and start to give us some of those really cool PenF type cameras. So for travel and for street photography, we can have current hardware that takes advantage of those wonderful compact lenses that we already have. This is definitely a keep an eye on the space. As I said, you can read the entire interview because there's lots of other good stuff in there by going to the link in the show notes. Right, stick care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to thank our Inner Circle members, the folks that support this community, this podcast month in and month out. They also have their dedicated space on Derek Story Online for just Inner Circle members, where lots is going on there. And then I'm going to be hanging out with some Inner Circle members here really soon who attend our workshops, both physical and online workshops, and they get discounts for every one of those events, which is always fun, right? When you get a discount that's bigger than what you paid for the entire year, that's a good bargain. Anyway, Inner Circle members are really, they're the engine that powers this community. I'm really grateful to everyone who has signed up, and I'm hoping that you will consider it for this year as well. All you have to do is go to the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Click on it, nose around, you can sign up there. And as I said, I'm hoping that you will join us in 2024. We have tiles for all sorts of good things on the Digital Story on every page. A lot of the folks that I'm working with right now, of course, B&H and Amazon, Red River Paper, all of that. If you're going to be purchasing items from any of these retailers, if you would go to the Digital Story first, click on that tile, that'll take you right over to the site, and then you can search as you normally would. That helps support this podcast, and I truly appreciate it. And finally, I'd like to give a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. I'm hoping that I get some shots on my way to Sedona and in Sedona that I can make some beautiful prints with, because I'll tell you, nothing looks better than a nice big print of something absolutely gorgeous. That is a thing to behold. So I'm sitting here looking at my Canon printer right now and going, oh boy, I hope to bring something delicious home to you. Red River Paper helps us make those beautiful prints by providing us with some of the best paper in the business in a variety of surfaces and sizes, lots of information about types of paper to use with types of photo projects, lots of interesting tutorials to help us make things like fine art cards, and then, of course, reviews of different printers to help us pick the right tools for the job. All of this can be found in one spot, and all you have to do is click on the tile that's on every page of the digital story, the Red River tile. That takes you over to the landing page. There you can explore the rest of the site. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Next week, you're going to hear from me on the road. Cross your fingers. Until then, have a great week. Get out there, take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.